Welcome to Trapping Across America, guys. I'm Chip Davis. I'm sitting again this week for Clint Locklear. Clint is gone on the second week of the Fur Takers Convention, actually, this week. He was gone to another convention last week, and I sat in and filled in for him. This week, Clint is at the Fur Takers of America Convention in LaGrange, Indiana. That show is scheduled for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, June 25th, 26th, and 27th. So by the time this show airs, he'll still be at LaGrange, Indiana at the FTA show. And he's in the Predator Control Group booth there that's in that show. And he'd love for you to stop by and meet him and shake his hand. And he'd like to show you his lures and his baits and his DVDs and his supplies. And Clint's got some pretty cool new products that's coming out. I'm sure he'll have those at the show there too. So stop by his booth there if you're anywhere close to Indiana or the surrounding states. I promise you it'll be a worthwhile trip to go and just take in a show. Certainly worthwhile to go meet Clint. He'd love to see you and meet you. But even bigger than that is these shows are slap full of demos and useful information, and you will learn something, I promise. Everything under the sun you could think of relating to traps or trapping or snaring or anything above is there, and usually there's people with some really cool expertise that'll walk you through those and show you in the form of demonstrations or even one-on-one at their booths visiting with them. And I love to go to these shows. I meet new people every time I go to them. And actually tonight's radio show is no different. I'm sitting here with a good friend of mine that I met at a show this past fall. We're gonna get into that here in a few minutes and talk more about it. But first, before we get into the meat of our show tonight, I do have a great interview lined up. I think you're going to have a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to doing this interview. It's one that I've been thinking about doing and wanting to do for Trapper Radio ever since I kind of started filling in for Clint a little bit. And I'll tell you a little bit how that started. I've been an avid listener to Trapper Radio for, two or three years now, maybe longer than that, a good long while. I've gone back in the archives and listened to just about every show that's every Trapper Radio show that's been up, and some good stuff here too. I've learned tons about it, and even to the point that I almost make this part of my, I laughingly say this because it's almost like an addiction, but I make this part of my week schedule. Every Friday night, if I'm happen to be busy Friday, then Saturday, I look forward to tuning in to Trapper Radio each week. And occasionally, Clint was gone. He's got to make a living too. And, part of what he does is, as a result of being in the trapping business is being around the trappers, which is what we all look forward to doing, and hanging out with guys just like yourself that trap and at these shows. And when he does that, he cannot make, literally is not enough time in the day to fill in. So I kind of selfishly felt like there's a little void in my weekly schedule when there wasn't a Trapper Radio show up. So I kind of mentioned to Clint and said, hey, I may be interested in maybe doing one or two of these things just to fill in when you're gone. Well, one thing kind of led to another, and that worked out. And so I'm not Clint, and I don't do nearly as good a job, but I do enjoy filling in. I enjoy doing these interviews, and so I just the whole part of it. And so I've enjoyed it. I appreciate Clint letting me sit in for him, and hopefully, we'll have, instead of a week of silence with no show, we'll have at least a week that I can kind of cripple through and tide over from the time that Clint is here to cover for when Clint's not here. But Clint hopefully will be back next week and be back on his regular schedule then. Following up real quick, and we're going to get into this week's show, but want to kind of mention a couple of things. I was actually shocked after last week's show. Some of these guys, I'm telling you, trappers are just good people. I found this to be true over and over and over again, and I'm still a little new to doing these radio shows. And if you listen to the last week's show, I had a child that had surgery last week, and I kind of went into that a little bit. And within a day or so of that show airing, making the air, I've got emails from numerous guys, and I just kind of wanted to give a thank you, shout out, Larry, Darren, Jesse, Josh, and Keith. Thank you so much for the emails and the encouragement. You guys had such kind words and support and encouragement from my family and what we were going through. I'll give everybody just a quick, brief update. Kay's doing a lot better. The surgery was a huge success. He's still sore and feels like he's been 12 rounds with a heavyweight, but he is getting better day to day on his feet and walking around. So he's definitely on the mend. I appreciate so much the thoughts and prayers that you guys sent out to my family through a somewhat trying time here, and I really appreciate that. So thank you so much for remembering us, and we're gonna move right on into the meat of tonight's show. And let me just kind of set this up, and I want to I will get started. But I went to a show. I took my Expand a Pan booth last year to Arkadelphia, Arkansas. The NTA, National Trappers Association, had their Southeast Regional last year. It happened to be in Arkadelphia, Arkansas. So I loaded up and I went over there, and we did the show, and I just met scores and scores of outstanding people. We actually got a room at as the show had set up, they kind of had some recommended hotels, and we stayed at one of those. And my next door neighbor in this hotel happened to be a guy by the name of Terry Lynn Jones, and that's who we're going to interview. Didn't know Terry Lynn. I think it was the second night of the show. We were sitting around and just kind of visiting and doing what trappers being trappers. We were talking trapping and everything in between and related to that. And I got to meet Terry and we kind of got hit it off. And Terry does some really, really cool stuff with snares and boxes and even turtles and different things. And we're going to kind of cover some of those tonight as we go on the show. But I'm sitting here with Terry Lynn now. Terry, I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell the folks what your name is and where you're from and a little bit about you.
I'm Terry Lynn Jones. I'm from Transylvania, Louisiana.
All right. Kind of nicknamed the Transylvania Trapper, right?
That's right.
I thought that was kind of catchy and all that. So, well, tell us a little bit about how you got started trapping and how long you've been trapping and that kind of thing. And also maybe go into the transition of because you started off with foothold trapping primarily, right?
That's right. I've been trapping probably in the neighborhood of 40 years. I mink trap, started out just like everybody else, just mink coon trapping, and years went by, the coyote market come alive, and I started snaring.
Okay. Any particular reason you left the footholds and went to coyotes, went to snares when you got into the coyote market? Or?
Well, it was just the markings on the feet and and snares just more easier for me, and I just got into snares.
I got you. That's we both live market trap a lot, and that's one of the differences that it seems like these live markets like. My experience is it seems like in Louisiana they kind of prefer the snare caught coyotes versus Mississippi. We can get by selling them with foothold trap caught coyotes. So that's something kind of interesting. So I guess that was the main catalyst for you going to the snares.
It's just a lot more easier to snare, and it was just a lot better snaring.
Okay. Well, your snare line is, and I've come to Louisiana last year early in the season. I rode with you on it one day, and it is so incredibly different than any other snaring that I've ever seen or been exposed to, and I think it's super cool, and it works for you. I mean, you caught one or two coyotes last year, didn't you?
I caught a good many, 156.
156 coyotes in one year, and that's kind of average what you've been doing for...
That's a better year.
Yeah, yeah.
Usually around 100. That's a good year.
Right. But you're nailing them. You're absolutely knocking them out. And these are, these are live caught caddies that you still got to come home and go sell and other things too, and busy. And my hat's off to you for those kind of numbers. And I know it's a lot of hard work, but it is such a different and such a unique way of snaring, and it's successful. You're making it work. So that's really what I kind of wanted to dwell on a little bit. So let's just kind of start with your system. Just kind of explain it to us as you have explained it to me before, is kind of what your system is and how it works. And there's so much of this I just love because it's so practical, and from what you're doing with your cane to how you fix it and all that. So I'm just going to let you talk a little bit.
Well, a lot of people use wire, and years ago I tried the wire and it just didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. And I come up with this cane. I make a H,
And we say cane, what kind of cane? Just plain old creek bank kind of cane?
Creek bank, that's right.
Like fishing pole cane.
That's right. And which I use other stuff. You don't necessarily don't have to be cane. You can use, here in the South, we got what they call coffee bean. You can use that or just any stick. But mainly I use a cane, and I'll cut them about around 2.5-3 foot long. And I stick one on each side of the trail and make a H. Just put one across the top, and all I do is take tape and tape it up and make a loop basically like you would with wire.
And what kind of tape are you using?
Just regular black tape.
Just like electrical tape?
That's right.
Yeah.
Regular electrical tape.
Okay. Okay. And so the frame is just a support, right?
That's right. It just holds it up in the trail. And then occasionally I'll take some Johnson grass or some kind of weed or little stick or something and run up through it on both sides to kind of hold it in the trail. And I use a wooden stake to stake my snare down.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the wooden stakes, because what you're doing on those is I found really interesting too. I think it's really unique.
Well, what I do, I make my own snares and I make them about six foot long and I put a swivel in the middle. And then I take a wooden stake, some of that's cut off a ditch bank, just you cut little saplings, just anything that you can find. And I've got it, a little nut on the end, and it draws tight on the stake. And I'll just drive it all the way under the ground. And when I get ready to take that snare up, instead of having to pull a stake up or using any other kind of stake, I'll just take and cut my snare off at the ground. And it's a lot faster for me that way, because I set so many of them. I set, sometimes I'll have 300 to 400 snares out at one time. And it's just faster for me that way.
Okay. So you're just talking about you making your own snare. So what kind of cable, how thick a cable, what kind of crimps on the ends and all that sort of stuff?
I use eighth cable, and I use the little heat treated nuts. Sometimes I use them. Sometimes I just go to the hardware and just get just a regular little nut and hammer down. Hammer nuts. I don't use any crimp on.
Right. And are you making your own your cable slides or?
No, I order them. I get them and just a washer type.
Yep.
and the wire swivel.
Okay.
And everything else, I buy it at local hardware.
Right. So you don't have much a piece in your snares as far as money then. I mean, the only thing you're really buying besides the cable itself is just your washer slides, right?
That's right. I probably got maybe a dollar in the snare.
I got you. Okay. I like what you're doing so much. I bought some one of the snares last year, and that worked for me just because I wasn't set up to build all my snares from scratch. But I mean, that worked fine too. It was basically your same system that I copied, and I had a lot of success with it too. So.
And another thing, I like the cane. You can that cane versus using something else. When you put that cane in the ground, see, most of the time I'll leave a snare there the whole winter. When I set it out, it's there till the end of the season. And that cane, when you stick it in the ground, it don't rot. It'll be there. And I like that cane better than I do anything else. I've tried wire, but I would rather use, that's just a system I come up with, and that's what I like to use.
When you stick the cane in the ground, this is a question I've had, and when I've kind of duplicated your system some, do you take your leaves off the cane? Sometimes you have those long flowing leaves on cane, or do you strip those off?
I'll just take a machete and cut all the bushy part off.
Right.
And
okay.
I don't leave that on there.
Right. And another thing I've noticed about the cane, I cut some last year green and started using it, but especially when that stuff turned brown, after it's been cut for a little while. You pre-cut yours, right?
That's right. I'll cut mine probably in October, and then by the trapping season. I usually don't start till around December the 1st, somewhere around in there. I like to let it frost and let the vegetation die down where you can see their trails good.
And so I guess my point And what I noticed was when that cane turns brown, it really looks natural.
Oh yeah, it blends in good.
Yeah, yeah. It's it's almost looked like it was growing there. And you would think that with it being an H shape, like a capital H, you would think that would kind of not be natural looking. And I tried some with kind of some arches on them, but yeah, when I was explaining to you, you said, "Don't worry about that. The county's not gonna care."
And, I've used the wire and. To me, that H, it makes him when he's coming down his trail. To me, that's cane hanging across the top, the part that the snare hangs mm-hmm. on,
the horizontal part.
That's right. I think when he comes to it, he ducks under the top H part, mm-hmm. and I think that helps mm-hmm. you know to kind of guide him in that snare.
Right. One thing that's I hear a lot of snare guys talk about, and here again, what works for you, I mean, you caught 156 coyotes out of these things last year. You're doing something right. What works for you may well work for me, or it may not work for me. There's a lot of different things that just because you do it this way doesn't mean that's the right way to do it. Would you say that? I mean,
that's right.
But it certainly is working for you, and because it's working from you, I think there's something here that we all can learn something from. One thing that's different, there's a lot of guys that I hear talking about snares and snaring are using, they're trying to make that snare as invisible as they possibly can. And you're using 1/8 cable. That's a big old cable out there.
Years ago, I was using 3/32, and I was having trouble. They was breaking the snare.
Mm-hmm.
They wasn't actually breaking it. What they were doing, they get in it and swivel probably wasn't working properly.
Mm-hmm.
And they were breaking, I started losing them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went to the 8th cable.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to the 8th cable, like last year I caught 156, I would say, I think maybe I lost one
mm-hmm.
by twisting out.
Right, right.
And
even with the bigger cable, you hadn't had any kind of issues with them, with avoidance of the snare or anything?
Some of the coyotes you probably do because you're not going to catch all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what kind of system you're
right,
using.
Right.
It's just the way it is.
I think, and we hadn't really talked about that much, but I'd like to ask you now. I think it's got a lot to do with where you set them because I've ridden with you, and I want you to kind of explain your locations a little bit and how you pick them, seems really, once you learn what you're doing, it seems really easy to pick your locations out because they're quite a bit different than what I'm looking at. But they're also very similar to lots of other places I've been in the country. I can think of Central Michigan looks a lot like your North Louisiana is where you're at, right?
North Louisiana, northeast corner.
And it's flat ground there with lots of ditches is what what really stood out to me. And I've been places, like I said, that I just come right to the top of my mind that places in ag country in Illinois is like that. I know Central Michigan is a lot like that. Iowa, there's a lot of places in Iowa with these ditches all around these ag fields. And so tell us a little bit about your locations and where you set them and what you're looking for there.
Well, my area has a lot of drainage ditches and we have some CRP, but mainly I trap out in the farm area because there's so many, deer.
Mm-hmm.
But I just get on a ditch and I'll railroad
mm-hmm.
a ditch and you just go down the ditch and you'll find a silted in place. That's a place where the water comes out of the field where they have the water to drain in the ditches
mm-hmm.
and it'll be a silted in high place.
Mm-hmm.
And a coyote he don't like to get his feet wet too
mm-hmm.
much and he'll find a high place, a beaver dam. But you gotta have grass, that's the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you just look for them kind of locations in a place where a small ditch hits a big drainage ditch right in the corner. That's
mm-hmm.
a real good place.
Mm-hmm.
But you're
still just almost exclusively setting the ditch crossings, correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
Just find a natural place. And the strange thing about this I've noticed through the years, and I've been trapping them since I've been snaring probably since about 80, I'm gonna say around 85, 80, 1985, 86.
Mm-hmm.
And I catch them coyotes pretty much in the same location every year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like they all cross the same place, but you know, you'll catch some of them and they'll just disappear. They'll leave, you mm-hmm. know. But the next year you go back and the same, if it's not in the same trail, it's just maybe 10 yards mm-hmm. down the ditch.
Maybe just changed by how the ditch silted a little
bit.
That's
right. Yeah. And you pretty much going to catch them in the same place mm-hmm. every year. I do it year in and year out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've been trapping them a long time, snaring them a long time.
Yeah. Well, that probably is no difference than anywhere in the country if you learn kind of how to look for those high spots in the drainage
right.
ditches. And
once you learn where the coyotes is crossing,
mm-hmm.
you've got the hard part done.
Mm-hmm.
And once you figure them out where they're in my area, it's say you got a lot of turn rows where the farmers use.
Mm-hmm.
And where that turn row hits a big ditch, 9 times out of 10 where that turn row hits the ditch,
mm-hmm.
they're going to have a crossing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then what they're doing, they're just coming down these roads, and when they get to that ditch,
mm-hmm.
they're going to cross.
Right.
And it don't necessarily have to be a high place there, mm-hmm. but a coyote, he's just not going to hit the water unless he's after
mm-hmm.
something to eat, you know.
Right.
He's just not going to hit the water.
Now, even though most of what you're doing is, you know, with your snares is kind of trail sets, you know, almost of that. That's actually, I think, probably how that would be defined as trail sets. You still occasionally use lure, right?
Occasionally, I do.
And so explain what you're doing with your lure, on even though it's still a trail set.
Sometimes I'll take some lures, if there's a little bush there or something, I'll smear a little bit up on the side of a little bush.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, that's about all I ever do.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and I'll use a beaver occasionally,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
just
yep.
occasionally. But most.
And
most
you're a pre-bait guy too. You like the deer carcass stuff scattered through your line some and in between your trails. Is that right?
Or? Yeah, I bait occasionally, but not a whole lot. If
mm-hmm.
if I'm where there's a lot of deer, I think that's good to use.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that way, if you put a lot of deer scraps in there, the deer won't come in there so
mm-hmm.
bad on
mm-hmm. One thing, and this is something that I kind of got through my mind and now I almost take for granted. Here again, we're live market coyote trapping is what our goals are. So about how far do you put, and you got just a traditional style deer stop, but basically another nut that's just hammered together down from your loop a certain way, right?
That's right, about 9 inches from the washer.
Okay, and you just hammer that closed and...
Just hammer it tight, just hammer it down on...
Right, right. And so any other tips or tricks to keep your critter alive? I know occasionally you do catch an occasional deer and you have had just exceptional luck, almost 100% of releasing your deer, right? What you're telling me?
Uh-huh. Most of the time you can just turn a deer loose.
Yeah.
No problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you just cut your cable by doing
that's
that, right?
Just. But a deer, you have to watch him because he will, them hoofs, they're awful dangerous, and you just have to get him where you can cut the cable off of him. And
right, right. Any particular way that you get out there and release him or anything like that, or even your, as far as that goes, even your coyotes, you know, any problem catching those out at the end of the, you know, at the end of the loop or anything? Or?
No, I don't have any problems.
Okay, all right. Well, I didn't know if you used any kind of particular, you know, tool or anything like that to do, but that's fine. You know, I would just think that would be, you know, when you got a big critter like that, like a deer, you're trying to get loose. If you had any kind of anything like that that you used or whatever, because that could be dangerous, and that's something that's certainly worth, you know, cautioning guys about.
Yeah, well, I do use a tool. It's a snare chaser,
mm-hmm.
the one that
mm-hmm.
you make,
mm-hmm.
and that is a good tool.
Mm-hmm.
It works real good. You just all you have to do is just put it around the cable. It's got how it's made.
Mm-hmm.
And you just hold it down with your foot,
mm-hmm.
and your hands are free.
Right.
And you just put your catch cable around him, and no problem.
Yeah. I know when we first came up with that whole idea of the snare chaser, it was, I had a long snare, and it was on your style of snaring that where I caught this particular coyote, but golly, I probably had, and I just, the reason I had it so long, my anchor point, it was, I guess, how do I even explain this? The ground was real soft where I needed the snare to go. I had your H framework, but I basically had a snare extension, so my whole entire snare was probably 15 or 18 feet long. Well, I caught a coyote in it. Well, now he's got, you know, 32, 3 feet to roam around there, and it looked like a circus act. I'd be trying to get a head catcher on one with a long snare like that.
Especially so. When, like me, when I, not now because I'm retired now, I don't work like I used to. I mm-hmm. kind of work when I want to, but late in the evening times, right before dark,
mm-hmm.
you get a coyote and you're trying to get him and he's running around and that snare chaser, It does a good job.
Right.
Because late in the evening or early in the morning, before mm-hmm. daylight,
mm-hmm.
either way.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially you in the dark, and you that snare chaser, it works real good.
Right, right. Well, it's, we look like clowns out there chasing that. Bailey was with me that day, and we were, I don't know how in the world I caught the coyote without it. We finally tried to, you get him hemmed up in one corner and try to get a head catcher around his neck, and the next thing you know, he'd shoot past you. Anyway, we came up with that idea, and that helped a bunch. But you don't use that on every one, and it's just really the difficult situations, well, like the deer and the
snare chaser, it works good any time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can use it every time if you want it.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
when you get a coyote, every one of them act different.
Mm-hmm.
But you know
mm-hmm.
that all
yeah.
of them
yeah.
are different, because some you get, especially I've noticed a little female. She's
mm-hmm.
worse than any of them. some of the little females, they'll just jump high as they can. That snare will let them jump.
Yeah.
And that snare chaser, once you get that cable and get your foot on it,
yeah.
the fight's over.
Right, right, right. Well, it's I've learned a lot about and trying to put some rhyme and reason into that. My problem, it seems like more the really, really bad ones I have, because I'm foothold trapping, but the really bad ones I have are the big alpha males. Those are the ones that are try to eat me, it seems like. And I have had some bad females too. And I've also, I don't know, I mean, I've caught coyotes that look like exact same size and exact same sex. And some of them you can almost give verbal, you can almost tell them to sit and they'll sit, and yeah, they're kind of sweet. The other ones will be mean as they can be. So it's, you're right, they all got individual personalities and all that. So, well, you're talking about, you already mentioned you run 350, 400 snares. And so what's your theory on leaving them out that long? I know you've told me something real interesting that toward the end of the season, I know it was probably mid-season when I rode with you last year for a morning, and you were telling me something about the snares that you had set the very first day, about what happens as time goes on. I think you said the longer that snare stays there, the better it is.
That's right. I have left them. I have left a snare set it the day one and not catch one till right at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the longer it sets, the better it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You never know, but the best thing to do on snaring is when you set that snare, if you can leave it alone,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because it'll catch him eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like over a snare over a steel trap,
mm-hmm.
because the rain and bad weather, rain don't it don't bother a snare too bad unless you get a 4, 5, 6 inch, you know, a big rain.
Mm-hmm.
And that snare, that's what I like.
And still, that's really not affecting your snare per se. I'm guessing, this is a question, it's more affecting the water. If you get a big rain, the water in the ditch just comes up, right?
That's right, and floods you out.
Right.
Which, when it goes back down, it's still just as good as it was.
Right, you know? Right. But there's no real monkeying with the snare or anything just because of the rain. The rain is not affecting your snare. The rain's affecting your location.
That's right.
Okay.
The flood water, you know.
Yeah,
once,
yeah.
Once the water goes back down, you can catch one
right.
when it gets back out, gets back down in its banks. You're
right.
ready to go again.
Right, right. And you really, I mean, especially you showed me how you brace them up with your grass, and I think you talked about that earlier. You take Johnson grass and just kind of barely touch them to keep the.
That's right. You mm-hmm. can, once, I had that problem when I did use wire back And when I first started snaring years ago, I tried everything. I tried the wire. I tried hanging them on vines, weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why I come up with this, but I just come up with it. Mm-hmm. And it's deadly for me. It works for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, one integral and key part of your system is this black electrical tape. And you were telling us about it at the show last fall, and I said, boy, that's an ingenious idea. I love that idea because it's cheap. I mean,
the only drawback to the electrical wire, if it's raining,
mm-hmm.
and if it's raining, that tape don't want to stick.
But that's why you're setting, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
When you're setting,
right.
But what I do, I'll carry a little wire with me sometimes,
mm-hmm.
if it's raining, and I'll take some little bitty fine wire,
mm-hmm.
and you can wrap that wire. You can mm-hmm. use a bread tie.
Right, right.
You can use one of them.
Yeah.
And just wire that snare to the sticks just like you was going to tape.
Right. Well, the rain's not going to affect it once you have it, once you set it the first time and it rains on, then it's not going to wash anything away.
Once the tape's stuck,
yeah.
You don't have any problems with it.
Well, it's what I found, and the day I rode with you, I didn't actually watch you set any, but what I found with mine, I basically just held I stuck the two vertical pieces in the ground on either side of the trail, and I held the middle piece of cane to the horizontal piece of cane up to make the center part of the H. If you imagine, it's kind of like a plus symbol if you were to write it with a pen on a piece of paper. And so I just went kind of from the bottom left corner to the top right corner, about two wraps, and I didn't even break my tape. I just kind of rolled it around and then went from the top left to the bottom right. So basically I made an X with my tape, and I was amazed at how stout that was. Because I push my cane 2 or 3 inches in the ground. Is that kind of what you're doing, or
maybe a little bit more than that?
Okay.
3 to 4 or 5 inches, something
right.
Like, just depending on the soil
right.
situation, you know.
But I guess I was just amazed at how strong that was and how long that would last. And you're getting the whole trapping season out of it.
Well, I have set them, and lots of times a bird to get on that. A snare, sometimes when you have a snare shut too, you think something's coming through and
mm-hmm.
knocking it down, even with a wire.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening? I've seen it bunches of times with this H system I'm using.
Mm-hmm.
You'll pull up and birds will get on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing, the birds getting up there and just playing around,
mm-hmm.
and your snare is shutting too.
Right.
But I take a weed, like I was saying earlier, you take a weed and kind of weave up through that snare on both sides of it to
mm-hmm.
keep the wind from blowing it.
Mm-hmm.
And if a bird happens to get up on it, that'll help keep it stationary.
Right.
Keep it from shutting.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Now you also use the tape to tape the top of your loop about on your cross member there.
Right.
Is that right?
Right, yeah. Behind the lock.
Just
make you a loop, like 9-10 inch loop, like whatever.
Mm-hmm. And that, I meant to ask you about that. That's what size loop are you running for your coyotes?
Probably about a 9-10 inch.
Okay. And how tall is the bottom of that loop over the top of the ground?
From the bottom of the ground.
Yeah.
I usually. Depending on the, it just depends, because lots of times you're sitting on the slope of a ditch,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
most all my snaring is done on ditches.
Mm-hmm.
But probably 9 to 10 inches off the ground, something like
okay.
that.
Okay, so the top of yours, if you got 9 or 10 inches from the bottom of your loop to the ground, and then your loop is 9 inches, and so your loop is say 9 inches on that particular set, then you're basically 18 inches from your horizontal piece of your H down to the ground.
That's right.
Okay, okay. And then you're taping the snare itself right behind the lock.
That's right. Tape your snare to
mm-hmm.
the cane.
Mm-hmm.
Just make you a couple of wraps
right.
around the cane.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's all it is to it.
Right.
That's it. You're just making an H.
Right. Now, what about catch circles and resetting after you catch a coyote in one of these things? Because what I found, and I caught several in your system here, and I like it because it's a system, is versus just a haphazard way of it's a thought through system, and that's and it works, and that's why I like it. So I caught a few of them. Now, even though we talked about how strong and all this was, it's not strong enough for a coyote. We're trying to keep them alive. It's not too much for him to get tangled up in and choked
oh, no.
out, or
oh no, when he hits it, it's just he's mm-hmm. gonna all that the tape's gonna fall off and mm-hmm. won't be any problem. I never had one choked down like this. Never.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you get ready to remake that sex. I know you've catch multiple coyotes on, you know, on. And I'm not talking about doubles. I'm talking about, you know, basically from the same exact crossing. You catch multiple coyotes each year on the same crossing. You just get further down the ditch on the same trail.
I've caught as high as 6 or 7 coyotes off the same mm-hmm. location. Mm-hmm. You just back up and just try to. You got to stay in the grass. You know.
Mm-hmm. You get just right on the outside of that catch circle.
I've got right on the outside of it, back up in the grass a little bit, and mm-hmm. reset.
Okay. And I noticed the day I rode with you, on most everyone, especially when there was a turn road and on each side of the ditch, you'd have both sides of that trail set, right?
That's right. I've caught doubles.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one years ago, I pulled up at one location, and I was looking at 5 coyotes at one time.
Wow.
All within 50-75 yards, just
mm-hmm.
right there. You
mm-hmm.
know,
that's pretty cool. With that many snares, when you get 400 snares out, how do you keep track of all of them?
Well, like I said earlier, I've trapped the same locations 30 years, however long it's been. It's been a long time,
mm-hmm.
and I can pretty much tell you where I'm going to set a snare before I get there, mm-hmm. because I catch them in the same location year in, year out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll take some orange flagging, mm-hmm. like most people do,
mm-hmm.
and I'll just, right back up from where I have my snare set, I'll just take me a little piece of flagging and tie up on the weed or whatever's there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if I got 3 or 4 or 5 snares set in one place, I may put me, you know, 3 or 4 flags there.
Right, just to give you a heads up, I got 3 snares coming up.
But most of the time, when I'm on a farm or something, I know where they're at, because, you know, once you, if you run a snare every day, from mm-hmm. day one to the end,
mm-hmm.
after a while,
right,
it's in your head. you know where they're
at. That's right. I remember when I rode with you that day, I just asked you, because yeah, it's so different than, you know, when we're coyote trapping. We're both live market trapping, but you know, I'm setting a location for 10, 12, 14 days, and I'm moving on to the next farm or the next place or the next location and pulling that set. And sometimes, and I'm not running nearly as many traps. I mean, I may be running 40 or 50 traps, sometimes up to 100 if I'm really, you know, especially if my kids are out of school and I got a little help, we get up to 100 sets. But sometimes when I've just got 30 or 40, a lot of times I'll turn around and run them backwards or something. I kind of jokingly said something to you about that. I remember your comment. I don't know if you remember that or not. He said, man, I couldn't run these things backwards. He said, I could run them with my eyes closed forwards.
That's right.
But so it's all in how you know, how your mind, I guess, perceives on what's coming up and all that.
I don't like to run them backwards. I like to go forward.
Yeah. So, and I think to fitting in that whole system and mentality, I kind of like what you're doing there. It makes a lot of sense and all that. Oh, what about the vehicles? I know you used to run them on a four-wheeler. You just changed and...
Yeah, I got a Honda 500 Pioneer,
mm-hmm.
and I really enjoy that thing. Mm-hmm. It's a good rig.
Yeah, I would imagine that. All right, so let me ask you a couple questions.
That's another reason I use canes versus wire. Years ago, that wire, I was on a four-wheeler. Back years when I first started, it was on a three-wheeler.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you couldn't hardly trap out of the truck because it was so muddy and nasty.
Mm-hmm.
And that wire, I'd have it, it was all tangled up, and mm-hmm. I just got aggravated with it.
Right.
And that's when I come up with the cane
mm-hmm.
idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the main reason I was hunting a system that would work for me.
Right, right.
And that's what I come up with.
Right. Let's just say your line is, just because the math will be really, really easy, say your line is 100 snares long, and I understand it may be 4 times that, sometimes in a year, and you're running on a particular day, what would you guess, how many times would you, and I'm not talking about catches, I'm talking about remakes, or birds knocked a snare down, or whatever, I mean, are you having to get off and go tend to a snare you know, to five of them out of 100, or you're doing 50 out of 100, or, you know, I mean, how often are you having to monkey with that snare?
The only time I'll have to fool with that snare, if it, like I said earlier, if it comes a big rain,
mm-hmm.
Now a big rain going down a ditch, it's going to wash.
Right,
you
right.
know, it's just going to be water coming down the ditch, and it may push them over a little bit, or kind mm-hmm. of, you mm-hmm. know, and I may have to fix them in. And if it comes a big storm one night and the wind's blowing real, real hard.
Right.
It's got to be blowing real hard.
Right.
And you have that with a wire, too.
Yeah, yeah.
But to me, the cane just, it holds them more stationary. To
mm-hmm.
me, it does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know one thing we started doing, too, and we just kind of stumbled up on it. Obviously, we were taping on our cross member, I like to call it, our horizontal piece mm-hmm. of that H. We were taping there, but we'd also tape on, just say, and I'm using regular earth anchors, is what I'm using to anchor mine instead of the wood stakes, because they work for me. But I tape on the vertical piece too, and that kind of helps some, you know, just stabilize that, you know, basically between on the earth anchor side where it's starting to go up the one side of the H, whether it be the right or the left. On the vertical pieces, I'd put a piece of tape there, and it kind of seemed like to me it helped stabilize it a little bit some there too. But I wouldn't use, I just use one wrap of tape around there.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. And that seemed to help some. But I was amazed at how rigid they were and how long they'd stay there. So yeah, I bet if you had a bunch of them knocked down, if you're running 300 snares and you had big water, I bet there's a bunch of stepping on and stepping off a quad foiler.
Well,
so
yeah, that's a bunch of it. But that's, like I said, that's the reason I use the cane, because
mm-hmm.
I had so much trouble with the wire.
Yeah.
And it was just so bucky, and mm-hmm. I can take that cane. And like I pre-cut it, like I said earlier, I pre-cut it back in October.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'll do, I'll have 24 to a bundle. I'll just take me some tape and
mm-hmm.
take me up canes.
Mm-hmm.
Have 24 to the bundle. That's enough to set 12 snares.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way I can keep up with how many snares I'm setting.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay, now if you got 24 to a bundle, I think this is important, because I've done the same thing because you told me. Now, obviously, you're going to have three pieces of that snare support, right? A vertical
That's
on the
right.
left, a vertical on the right, and a horizontal. So how are you getting the horizontal out of 24 pieces?
All you have to do is cut one end of your cane. Use one end of it. Just mm-hmm. cut a piece of it off, and you got your piece.
Gotcha. So out of those 24, 12 of those are going to be longer as you bundle them up. That way you break one over and cut it for your horizontal piece yeah. there, right?
Well, you can, when you cut them, just cut them a little long, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
And most time, I'll cut the other one off anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But all it is just an H. That's
yeah.
all it is.
Right. And I notice on a lot of mine, depending on the situation, I did it in the grass field some last year. If the two horizontal pieces look, after I get the H made, and sometimes mine even look more like a lowercase H, you know. Mm-hmm. But if the vertical part sticking up was above the grass and just for whatever reason looked out of place to me, I just take my clippers and cut the top of
yeah,
it off.
That's
and
all you
know,
gotta
yeah,
do.
Just to make it blend.
Or you can take you some, if you want, you can take some grass and kind of blend it in. You know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you can
yeah.
do different things with that.
That's
H.
right. But what I like about the system is it's so light. You can go in there with a bundle in one hand that probably doesn't weigh a pound and a half,
right.
and it's probably half of that. But
and they work just as good on a beaver as they do a coyote.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I use the same system.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I use the same system with a beaver.
Yep.
As I do a coyote.
Right.
Make
right.
the same H, but the only difference is I put the snare on the ground.
Right.
Push it in the mud.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And most of the time you'll catch that beaver right behind his front legs.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I use the same system.
Gotcha. Well, that's interesting. It's super light. I like that about it. You know, it's quick. What would you say? Now, you've done hundreds of these, and I've done just scores of them, but how long does it take you to time you hop off your rig, and you've got your cane in your hand, your snare in your hand, how long does it take you to make a set?
I would say, which I'm using a wooden stake. I have to drive a stake, and no longer than, I'd say, 4 or 5 minutes.
Really? Wow. Wow. That's,
at the most, that may be a little long.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how hard the ground is, and
mm-hmm.
it just
mm-hmm.
depends, you know.
Yeah.
But I would say roughly 4 to 5 minutes.
Gotcha. That's pretty quick. And then that lasts for the whole entire season.
Once you set it, it's there.
Right, right. I remember early season last year, I was talking to you, and you were setting, and you were coming in pretty tired for, you know, the 2 or 3 or 4 days that you were setting hard. You were, you know, but that's a lot of setting. How many will you get out in a typical day?
Most of the time, a good day, 60, it'd be a good day.
Yeah.
Good day.
That's still, even if it's a 50 average, that's pretty swift. I mean, 3 days of that, you got 150 snares set. And
but snaring's a lot different than foothold trapping, because foothold trapping, I've done that too. I mean, mm-hmm. you just go out on a turn rope, an intersection, or along a railroad track, or out on a turn rope, wherever, and you don't have to have you got to mm-hmm. have a certain spot for a snare.
Right.
And that's what takes more time snaring, because you've got to find that spot.
Exactly.
Where he's crossing.
Right.
You've got to be on location, and I mean on location.
Right. And that's something that I found that, like I said, I thought that your system was so valuable, because I've been so many places in the country that look a lot like what you're snaring on. And I think there's a lot of places that this would work great and save guys a lot of time and a lot of energy spent to have probably an increased catch. But right here, and we've had a chance today, we rode kind of across my farm where I do a lot of my trapping at. And I don't have really the ditch system here on this farm and in this part of the country as you do. And not to say that your system it goes without being used here, because I use it a lot, but I don't have as many locations here. I mean, you've seen this country. It's just that my locations are different.
Yeah, you got to have a lot of ditches, and it don't necessarily have to be a ditch. It can be mm-hmm. a grass field too.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken a four wheeler and just ride across a grass field.
Mm-hmm.
Just make ruts.
Mm-hmm.
You can set a snare in each rut.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe hang you a little lure up there or something, put you a little lure up on something. I've caught them that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've caught them all kind of ways. Beaver dam.
Right.
You know.
Right. Right. Well, I want to change gears here a little bit, and we may even come back to some of the snare things. There's ideas pop back in our head, but I really like your system a bunch. It's obviously it's working for you. You're putting a ton of fur. And your holding pens are, a lot of times you'd say fur shed, but you're just going your holding pens to sell to the live market guys. But it's an effective system. It works. It's light. It's got a ton of benefits to it. It's quick. There's a lot about your system I like. But you showed me something else about midway through season last year that I've absolutely fallen in love with. Something that's changed a lot of the way I trap small critters, and you know what I'm talking about. I'm gonna let you introduce the whole box idea here.
The box, I make a box.
And what we're talking about, just so folks can understand, we're making basically cubby set boxes, and I'm gonna let you explain this, but we're making cubby set boxes primarily with the idea of catching bobcats and also great big huge coons. So
yeah, they're deadly on coons and deadly on possums. But all it is, it's just a box. It's made 9 3/4 high and 8
mm-hmm.
8 1/4 wide.
Okay. And I've got one here that we're looking at as we're recording the show, so just so we could kind of try to describe the dimensions and that sort of thing to you.
And it's made out of 1/2 inch plywood, and it's got hardware cloth wire, which is wire like on the bottom of a chicken coop.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the back on the end of it, and actually the front of it's open and it's notched out on both sides. It's got a 2x4 nailed under the bottom of it, and I don't use
the big pans.
Yeah.
The big
pans.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We made those particular pans, and we can do anything. I made a lot of them and started trapping with just the regular triggers on mine. But
I like your pans. You come up with some good pans.
Mm-hmm. It's real similar to, you know, they're just Conibear pans. They're real similar to, you know, you actually showed me some of the first Conibear pans.
The wire
I'd seen, but
the wire on the trap that comes on the traps, I think when they go try to go in this box, it hits a bobcat in the nose, and he wants to back out. But I've come up I've used your pans, and and you can get a wooden pan to put on, and they work good.
Right, right. Yeah, you showed me the wooden pans when you first showed me these boxes.
And they're approximately, you can make them 16 to 18 inches long. And instead of staking it down, this is what I come up with. I use you can take your eye bolt, or you can take a big staple, and it's got that 2x4 on the bottom of it, and you can just drive you a staple in it, or eye bolt, screw it in, and just get you a quick snap, and snap it to your box, and then that way you don't have to stake it down. It's basically, the box is used as a drag.
That's right, yeah.
Now, I've never had one to drag one off, because he's not going too far.
That's right.
And I have caught cats in them, coons. I can't explain this, but most of the time when you catch a coon in one, he is a monster. And all I do, you can use a feather. You can hang it up in a bush. Or you come up with this idea, and I think that's a good idea. You took a piece of wire and went down through the side of the box, and you hang your...
That's right. Yeah, I just took a piece of number 9 trapping wire, and I cut that thing probably 5 feet long. I stapled it to the back of the box, and I made just a flag holder, and that number 9 wire was stout enough that I could kind of manipulate it to hang. I could hang either a piece of Christmas tinsel or a CD, or a lot of times I'm a big, huge fan of Clint's Unfair Advantage paste, and I'll take sometimes even a duck wing. I'll take that glow-in-the-dark paste and paste on that. You can see that for a long ways at night, and I think cats really can too.
And sometimes you can just put beaver caster in them, works good. And I like to use duck parts, any kind of bird parts, works real good in them. And what I like about your trap more than anything, the rain don't bother you. Snow, which we don't have much snow anyway, so we don't have that contend with, but it can sit out there and rain, it can be pouring down,
right,
and it's sitting there working the whole time.
Exactly, because this box now, guys, it's got 4 sides to it, so it's got what you would consider if it was a house, you would consider a ceiling in there. What I actually do on every single one of mine, and I probably need to try some other stuff, but this works so well for me, I'm real fond of cat collector as far as a bobcat lure or bait, and I guess it's kind of a slash lure and bait, but it's thick. It's pasty almost.
This is good to the
That's right. This is Predator Control Group's cat collector is what I use, and it sticks to the ceiling of the trap, and I'll pre-bait mine. And I'll have them, I actually trap out of a little Japanese mini truck is what I use. And I can get a full dozen of these boxes in there. I go ahead and set my traps. Now, the cool thing about this 220 is when you set it, most guys are going to be real familiar with what I'm talking about. The springs will fold inward, and you can slide that trap right inside the box when we're doing that. Well, I'll smear this cat collector on the top. It's completely protected for the rain. And there's, I just don't lose any lure. I just hardly ever have to re-lure. It lasts a long time. I use a lot of feathers, duck carcasses. Terry Lynn, you're a big dove hunter. I know you use a bunch of dove carcasses in there.
Yes, dove works good.
Right, and we can do that here legally in the South. I understand there may be some restrictions there on some of the northern states. I've talked to a few guys, so make sure that you check your local laws on what you're doing there, but that's what we're able to legally do here, and it works great, and it's killer on those but cats especially. I've caught a lot of bobcats in them just last year when you first showed me this. Now, what was our dimensions? 9 3/4 wide. This will be side to side horizontal. And then my boxes are 18 inches deep. Of course, at the very back, they have the hardware cloth, and on the vertical side on the top, they're 9 1/4, it looks like, tall.
Yeah, and I said 8 1/4, but it's 9.
It's 9 1/4 tall, yeah. And then on the very front of the very box, I've got a 2x4 that's cut just the width of the bottom of the box, and that just raises it up and gives it a little
that's
slant.
Right. You want it off the ground where when that cat comes up there, he don't have to where he can What? Where he don't have to get down so low, you know. He can
peep box, over in the
that's
box.
That's right. Yeah. Box to be up high enough where he can.
Right. Right.
And I've caught cats in them. I've caught coons. I mean, mm-hmm. I've caught mink in them before.
Wow. But,
I haven't caught many mink. I've caught a
right.
couple.
I've got a friend of mine. I was talking to a customer of mine in New York State, and he was looking into the possibility of using some for fisher even up there. And
I don't. I think they'd work on the otter. I really do.
Really.
If you could get them in the, you know, put them in the mm-hmm. not in the water and keep a mm-hmm. coon from getting in it, I believe they'd work with otters.
Right. You mentioned something real interesting that my experience with these boxes proved to show the exact same thing. The coon that we catch, the raccoons that we catch in these things, and I've got a theory. I don't know if this is right or not. I'm calling these bobcat boxes is what I call them. That's when you showed them to me the first time. You called them bobcat boxes, and you were talking about how many cats you... And that I'm thinking bobcat location when I set them on my trap line. And I'm wondering if that's not maybe not where, you know, I'm guessing the sow coons and the kits are maybe a little different locations. I don't know if the big boars are more on the ridges and traveling.
I think that's what it is. I think if you set them down close to water, you'd probably catch a bunch of, you know, smaller mm-hmm. coons. But I mm-hmm. think you're catching them dry land coons.
Right.
I think that's what it is.
Right. Well, what I like about them so much is... One, I love making them. It's a little, you know, woodworking project. It's easy to do. You know, I can draw these plans up and put them online, and in some way or another, I've actually thought about doing that a couple of different ways. But soon I'll have some. In one way or another, I'll have some of these plans done. You can do this on one afternoon with your family and build them. It's a fun little project to do. And then once you've got them built. I do mine out of treated plywood.
Yeah, you can use cypress if you want
mm-hmm.
to.
Yeah.
I'm using a half inch, or is that that's half inch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can use half inch, or you can use three quarters if you wanted to. It'd last longer, you know.
Right.
But it'd be a little heavier though.
Well, when it comes trapping season, what I like about so much about them, and I don't know if it makes any difference at all. I paint mine black, and I don't do a real good job of painting it black. I just kind of dull it down so it kind of almost blends. I don't know that that's important at all, especially for what we typically catch, which is bobcats, you know, raccoons and a lot of possums. But I don't think any of those are going to matter. It blended in. So what I like so much is the system, though. I'll have these things. I can have, like I said, I had a dozen of them in the back of my, you know, my trapping rig. And when I come to the location, I can stop and I literally set the box on the ground right where I may see the location from, you know, from the behind the steering wheel. I'll stop. I set it on the ground, put my trap in there, take the safeties off, and I'm gone.
It's so fast, and you can set them just like you normally would set a foothold trap in an intersection,
mm-hmm.
places like that, and they're just so easy and mm-hmm. fast. I mm-hmm. mean, when you make a catch, you don't have to contend with the mud and a nasty animal. You can just
right.
jump off, get him. If you want to put rebait your trap, throw right. it in there, and you're on your way.
That's right. And, you know, these things, I'm not even going to say the numbers because I had to have gotten. I played with these things the second half of this most recent trapping season, and the percentage that these things were absolutely phenomenal. I'm not going to even say the numbers because folks would say there's no way you're catching that much fur in these things. I'm telling you, if I said a dozen of them, I was going to have eight animals. It's unbelievable.
It may not be what you want, but it'll be
something. Yeah, and, you know, I caught some possums. It actually toward the end when my duck started rutting, I caught a lot of possums. But I caught a pile of bobcats in them, too. I mean, it's super successful, and they're so easy and so quick, and your lure lasts forever.
And I think that's the trick because you got your lure in there, and the rain's not washing your lure away, and I think that's one of the tricks to it.
Right, yeah, they just last forever. Now, yeah, on your side notches up here, and Terry Lynn's kind of pointing to, don't forget to tell about side notches. I've got my side notches there are 3 inches deep if you're going, you know, into the, to the pan, and then width, or if you're like looking at the box up and down, they're 2.5 inches. I'm sorry, 2 inches up and down. So all it is, and this is where your springs go. So that, and what this does, it allows you to have that 220 slide up inside the box. And I hope I'm doing a good enough job of explaining that. But these are just insets into the box so that your 220 sits up in the box just a little bit.
That's right. And when you put it in the box, you pull your springs down, and that'll set your trap off the bottom of that box.
Mm-hmm. It does two things there. It sets the trap, the bottom of that 220 off the bottom of the box, but it also really firms that up in there. It makes it solid.
When he hits the trap, it's not going to wobble. It won't give any at all.
Yeah, you take that, when you bend those springs down, that I do that, and then the last thing I do is remove my safety latches. But you bend those down, that trap's not going anywhere. You're wedging it in place, and it's rock solid. I really like the boxes. I like the, you know, we make the wide pans for them. We've got those on our website there. Those wide pans are the ones that we make, the expanded pans for them. They're 6 inches wide, and they cover the whole entire width. We basically don't leave any area that a cat could step on that thing and not throw the trap. It's I like the wooden style conner bear traps that you were using,
they're good too.
But they left, the only negative I saw with those at all, and it's not really a negative, like you don't have the trigger avoidance from the traditional wire triggers that are coming down. But what I liked about those is it's wide open, but that what I did not like about them is it left some area on the left and the right that a cat couldn't go around.
And the wooden pan, sometimes when you make a catch, that would have, I've had them split on me and had problems with that.
Right.
But
we're making ours out of metal. And, the only negative part I see to them is with either one, either style. The wooden ones are the ones that the expanded pans like we build for the 220s. They sit up high. You're going to give up about an inch of the bottom of your trap. But I think the benefit far outweighs that little bit negative because you don't have the avoidance. It seems like, once I started using those, we didn't have any trigger avoidance. There's no trigger there for them to avoid. They basically step on the pan and it throws a trap. So to understand that, when you're using these, any pan, whether it's the Connie style pans or the expander pans that we make for them, we're basically setting the trap upside down, setting it where the trigger is on the bottom.
That's right. You set it upside down, and your trigger will be on the bottom.
Yeah. That way, when the cat comes in, he can throw that. So that's a really cool system. All this, it kind of goes back to one of the very first things I said in the interview is, we just met by happenstance, and a lot of these things have changed the way I trap. I'm not a completely straight snare guy. Fact of the matter, I snare very little. I've got probably 10% of my coyote line or less is snares. But when I come across the right place, I love your snare system. It's real compact. It's easy. That's why I was excited to share it with the folks on Trapper Radio. But also, the box is the same kind of thing. It's almost a new concept. It's a game changer in coon and bobcat trapping for me.
No doubt. That box is a real good tool.
Yeah. Well, I like to compare it to this. It's as much change. If you say you're just talk about coon for a second. It's as much of a change and a time saver as DPs were over steel traps, then I'm convinced these boxes are that much more of a time saver over DPs now. I mean, I can have these, well, like I said, I pre-bait them. So I bait them when it's warm in the shed.
And the beauty part about this box, you don't have to get in the water.
That's right. That's right.
You don't even have to have them. You could do them in your leather boots if you wanted to.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And they are a really, really neat tool. I tell you what we'll try to do for the show notes. I'll try to take a picture of this box set up, and maybe even try to take a picture of your snare support system there that you use. And maybe the guys can kind of some of this stuff. And I apologize, this is radio. And my wife keeps reminding me I've got a face for radio. So, but sometimes it's kind of hard to Maybe I don't do the best job of explaining things. It's kind of hard to visualize what we're saying, but we'll try to, in the show notes, we'll try to stick a picture of these boxes and maybe also on the side a picture of your snare support system too, where folks can use it. Well, you also, we've been going for a little while now. We'll close up here in a second, but something else that you've been talking about, and I've seen it at conventions, I've heard about it, and I never have tried it. You're a turtle trapper too in the summer months, right? I want to hear a little bit about this. I have no experience with it, but you're doing well with it. And I want to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, I turtle trap. Now, I didn't do it much. I didn't do it any last year, but this year I've been hitting them pretty good.
Mm-hmm. It's the summertime, right?
That's right. I usually start in about the end of April around the 1st of May when mm-hmm. it warms up. It's got to warm up.
Mm-hmm.
And been catching a lot of soft shells, big soft shells. Been doing real good with it.
Mm-hmm. What's the market? What are you targeting? What kind of? I mean, I don't know much about turtles at all. Anything really?
Mainly, you can't sell a loggerhead anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You can keep one per day in the state of Louisiana to eat, but you can't sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm catching soft shell snappers and just a regular streaked head, which. He's a red ear. That's just what he's called, a red ear.
Mm-hmm.
Just a regular turtle you see in a pond, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing real good catching turtles. Mm-hmm. I do that.
Is it a pretty good market for turtles? Or?
You can do real good.
Mm-hmm.
Soft shells, I get $2.25 a pound in the rough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Snappers, I'm getting $1.25 on them.
Mm-hmm.
And just the old red-eared, streaked head, you don't get much for them. You get about 70, 80 cents a piece for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, evidently, some of these things are pretty good size.
When you're talking about 70 cents, you catch a lot of them.
Right,
I mean, you do. Sometimes you love them.
What's the average weight on these things? I mean, so what would a typical turtle be worth?
Well, you catch a... Some of these soft shells, now in Louisiana, I don't know about other parts of the mm-hmm. other country, but here in Louisiana, a good soft shell will weigh 15 to 20 pounds.
Okay.
And, you know.
So you're looking at 30 bucks roughly for an average turtle.
That's right.
And you're catching a pile of those a day, right?
Well, some weeks I catch 400 to 500 pounds of soft shell a week.
Wow.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'd say so. that'll cover your gas money.
I don't do that all the time.
Right.
Sometimes it's just like trapping, you know. Sometimes you hit, sometimes you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I
mm-hmm.
mean, that's just the way it is.
Right. Right.
No matter whatever you're doing, sometimes, especially when you're fooling with turtles or coyotes, sometimes you do well, sometimes you don't.
Right.
I mean.
And there's a good, you got somebody, a market you sell those into, and a pretty reliable market that's there all the time? Or?
Oh, yeah. I sell to a guy out of Arkansas.
Okay.
In Dumas, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. He's a big turtle buyer. He's been buying turtles from me probably, I hadn't been turtle trapping that long, probably, I'd say 10, 12 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I've caught a lot of them.
Right.
It's a lot of fun, but it's hot.
And this is in the same ditches that your coyote trapping in, right? But they have water in them, I guess. Or?
Same places. I guess that's one reason I may catch a lot of coyotes, because I'm out there all the time, and I'm mm-hmm. steady looking for a new place to set a snare, and
mm-hmm.
I look for sign all the time, and just, you know, I'm out there all the time.
Right. Well, that's interesting. I'm sure you never run across any water moccasins or cottonmouths.
Louisiana's got plenty of them.
So tell me just real quickly. I know we need to close up here shortly, but what are you catching these in? Is it a trap or a box? I have no clue how you're doing
this. It's just
a net, or
it's a hoop net. Is what it is.
Okay.
It's got three hoops on it, steel hoops, and it's basically like a catfish hook net. They mm-hmm. sell them at the conventions. I mean, they mm-hmm. see them there all the time. And it's got a single throat. In Louisiana, you got to have a single throat.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a single flat throat. Mm-hmm. Hook net's all it is.
Right.
And you just stretch it out, stake it down on both ends, hang your bait, you leave your net up out of the water where the turtle can breathe,
mm-hmm.
and you use German carp. I use carp and buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And you just hang it up in the net, and hope you catch.
And so you got 10 of these, you got to put them out and tend to them daily, or can you leave them out?
You have to run them every day.
Okay.
You set them one day and run them the next day.
Okay. Just like a steel trap, right. A foothold. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Huh. That's interesting. That's certainly a different twist that I've never been involved in.
And there's a lot of trappers that trap fur that trap turtles too.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is kind of a cool little sideline.
Yeah. Matter of fact, another coyote trapper introduced me to trapping turtles.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
he got me in it but I'm gonna, it's hard, hot work. It
yeah.
really is.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun because you never know what you're going to catch. How many you going to catch. It's like fur trapping.
That's right.
It's not any different. If you like to trap.
Exactly. That's right. Well, I think it's you hit the nail on the head. I called you on the phone a day or two ago and was talking about, you know, doing this interview and all that. We were talking just about trapping like we always do. And you said something there I thought was worthy of mentioning on the show. You're talking about the snaring and all that. And basically what you said, and you correct me here because I'm sure I'll probably get it a little bit wrong, but you said the snaring is really no different than you know, foothold trapping or anything else. It's a matter of hard work and getting the traps out.
That's
there.
That's right. You got to set a lot of snares. Because I can tell the population of coyotes has went down in my area, even though I caught 156 last year.
Mm-hmm.
But when you set that many snares, you know, I mean, that's what it takes.
Right.
It don't make any difference if you're setting foothold or snares or whatever kind of trap you're
right.
setting. It's just a lot of hard work.
That's right.
That's just all it is.
But it's rewarding hard work, too.
Oh,
it's a lot of fun, and actually, one of the guys that had emailed me about last week's show with some really cool comments. His name is Darren, and he kind of got off on a little in his email, and I don't think he'd mind me sharing this at all. You know, we're not looking at the best fur prices out there. Who knows what'll happen? You know, fur could come back up. It could stay down. Nobody really knows what it's going to do. There, you know, already starting to be some forecast for this winter's fur market and that sort of thing. But what Darren was saying in his email to me was, you know, he actually used the analogy of bow hunters. He kind of mentioned that bow hunting was big in his area, and there's a lot of folks do it. Same thing here. I'm sure it's the same thing in Louisiana. I mean, or deer hunting in general. It's not just strictly limited to bow hunting, but you don't make a penny in bow hunting. And I've had times I've really enjoyed, you know, deer hunting, especially bow hunting. And it's something I do for recreation, and you don't make a penny doing it. But he said in his email, he said, I've never heard anybody say, because I'm not going to make money, or I'm not going to cover my costs in my bow hunting this year, that I'm going to quit. And I think that's really a lot of merit to there. It kind of goes hand in hand with what you're saying is, and so many people miss this. I mean, trapping, one unique part about it, it's an outdoor experience, and we're trying to outfox the fox, so to speak, and this outdoor thing, but we do get money for it, and that's kind of a cool thing. It adds a whole another dimension, but we can't lose sight of this guy's in a little bit depressed fur market to quit. I mean, that's not the answer. It's got to be fun, and you got to enjoy what you're doing.
That's right. I trapped when it was good, and I've trapped when it's bad, and I just love to do it, and I'll do it till the day I die.
Mm-hmm.
I just love to trap.
That's right.
I mean, that's what you got to do. You can't worry about the money in it.
Right.
Just,
right.
Just have fun and trap. That's what it's all about.
That's the thing. Well, as Darren said, he likes the mentality of just go trapping.
Yeah.
I love that. I
do too. If I catch a rat in the house in a trap, you know, I love the trap.
That's right.
It's always fascinated me to catch an animal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't care what, I mean, I just love, I like to catch fish.
Right.
Or anything.
That's
I just
right.
I love to trap.
That's right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, I like that a lot, but yeah, when you talk about that, it's all about the systems. It's all about getting something that works for you, and that's a lot of work figuring that out, especially, you know, in the early stages of that. I know it's a lot of guys that a lot of guys listen to this program that are, you know, somewhat new to the game. They're still trying to learn the systems. And the more of this kind of information they hear, you know, we may be talking to a guy somewhere in the world that's listening to this, that this snaring system is going to work perfect for them. We may be talking to maybe other people listening and say, you know, I live in, you know, just timbered up areas that's going to be hard to find those coyote trails, those real distinct ones, and it may not work for them. But the more exposure you have to things like this, and the boxes are no different. The boxes are a system. The Bobcat boxes, they're a system that
I'll say this. I believe the box will work in any part of the country in the world.
That's right. I really like the boxes.
I really believe that. Now, snaring may be a different situation.
That's right.
But I believe this box will work anywhere.
That's right. But you know, whatever it is, I believe a guy should develop a system, you know, and it should be his system. It can be parts of what I do, parts of what you do, parts of what Clint or anybody else does out there. But that's why it's important to you know, just the more, you know, knowledge is key here. The more you see other folks do stuff, the more you can, you know, take a little bit from this one, a little bit from that one, and make it your own.
I use my system, and I'm not knocking anybody else's system. You know, wire works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't say my system's any better.
Right.
But it just works for me.
Mm-hmm. You know? Exactly. I think that's the key part right there. Well, guys, I appreciate y'all listening and tuning in. I appreciate your patience with me the last couple of weeks as I've tried to kind of fill in for Clint. Terry Lynn, I appreciate your time to do this interview. I think it's really worthwhile. I learned some stuff just interviewing you. I'm sure it was incredibly interesting, too, to a lot of the guys that are out there. I appreciate your time and willingness to do this for us.
I appreciate it, too. Appreciate you asking me to do it.
Okay, well, no problem. Anything else you want to add? Or
that's about it. Just good trapping to everybody. I hope everybody does good and get out and trap.
Well, good deal. Well, guys, again, I appreciate your patience for the last couple of weeks, and I appreciate you listening to me as I kind of bumbled and stumbled my way through here. But Clint will be back next week. He's off the road from the shows, and he'll be back, and I'm sure he's got some really cool interviews that he's done while he's on the show. So, you know, while he's been at these conventions, so we are planning on being at a couple of conventions as we're coming up. The Southeast Regional again is in, I think, Crossville, Tennessee. I'm planning on going to that one. So if you get close to there, stop by and see us. But we've really enjoyed it, and I appreciate your time and your patience, and Clint will be back with you next week. In the meantime, guys, keep learning, keep trying to figure stuff out, and we will talk to you soon. Good luck to you.